Good evening, Fast Am I, and welcome to this week's edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, a loss of planning status has left some in Crosby angry with the government as the development continues in the centre of the village. Residents have lost interested person status but have not been told why. We hear from one of them. And in the second half of the programme, a proposal to link Onchan and Douglas with a new active travel route has been lodged by the DOI. We hear from the Minister Ray Harmer and Isle of Man Cycling's Rob Holden. Moraun residents have been left horrified after discovering they've lost interested person status over a controversial development in Crosby. Work is underway by developer JM Project Management Limited to build 28 new homes and a large retail unit at Balaglonia Farm in the centre of the village. Moraun commissioners and scores of people in Crosby have continually objected to the development since the first plans were submitted in 2015. In this time, many residents were awarded interested person status by the planning authority, which gave them the right to appeal decisions. However, following the adoption of a new operational policy in July last year, it appears the villagers have suddenly lost this status without being told. One of them is Alison Lynch, who says many were angry to discover they no longer qualified, especially after the time and money spent opposing the plans. She spoke to me about the issue, but told me first who usually qualifies as an interested person.
For example, if I was to object to a planning application in St John's, they wouldn't take any notice because I live in Crosby. The planning application is in St John's, and so much further away. They're saying that you have to live within 20 metres of the development. Now, I'm no great mathematician, but I think a lot of the people who have had their interested party status removed do apply to the rules of living within, and even possibly myself.
Just so we can clarify the picture here, there's been this long burning planning development, and there's been objectors. You had this status, and all of a sudden, with the introduction of a new policy earlier in the year, you've all lost this status without being told any point.
That's right, yeah. Now, apparently, the operational policy on interested party person status, a new policy was issued in July last year. Now, a number of people who have had their status removed, including myself, we've spent long hundreds of pounds in objecting to the development and to certain aspects of the development. And suddenly, you know, we can do no more. Now I completely understand that the things have to change, policies change, but I personally think that it should be any new planning applications from July 2018, the new policy will apply to. Not something that is already in the plan and, you know, certainly 4 years down the line.
And have you had any warning, or has anybody approached the residents to say, we've had this new policy, we will be implementing it, you will lose your status, or has there been any communication on this?
No, nothing. And when I found out last week about this, I emailed my MHK, Mr. Shimmons, and he came back to me virtually straight away and completely understood, you know, why I was concerned and upset about this. He replied to me and said that he was forwarding on my email to Chris Thomas, who he believed would be the minister responsible for this.
Well, how do you feel about this, and how do others feel?
Angry, very angry. You know, that we've battled over this controversial planning application for, you know, for 4 years. And, you know, we're just being wiped off the list of, you know, people who can object.
Well, do you feel that's something sinister, or do you think it's something to do with the introduction of the policy and perhaps somebody hasn't realised the implications of what they're doing?
I probably think it's something to do with the introduction of the policy, but it doesn't lie well, and it makes people mistrust the government or certain parts of the government. You know, when there's such controversial things going on at the moment, you know, I'm all for transparency, and this is not transparent at all.
Moraun resident Alison Lynch. Well, cyclists, runners and walkers could soon be able to travel along a new route linking Douglas and Onchan if government plans progress. The Department of Infrastructure is proposing a cycleway between the two conurbations as part of its active travel strategy. Though still at an early design stage, the route is expected to start from Douglas Town Centre and pass through Upper Douglas, Willesden, Governors Hill and then on to Onchan. I asked Infrastructure Minister Ray Harmer to explain to me more about the proposed cycleway.
Yeah, I think very important for me is it would be about walking and cycling, so it wouldn't be a specific cycle lane as such, but what we're trying to do is very much in strategy, key areas that we've identified and was approved by DIMWAL, was very much to say, look, people within Douglas and Onchan and those environs can get into, make it easier and take some of the barriers, you know, where you're crossing roads or pavements and things like that, make it a much more pleasant experience getting into the centre and linking to very important conurbations. It would be key to that. We are, of course, very early in our development, but perhaps an area through Nobles Park and so forth. But that's, we need to get agreement from Douglas Corporation for this to happen. But if we were able to, that may be somewhere that we could find a good route.
Finding that route is quite a challenge in the areas we've got. Are there obvious sort of places you can go to, or do you have to think creatively about how you use certain areas to make a route?
You have to think very creatively. It actually works the same whether you're running, walking or cycling. Sometimes everybody says, well, you can just do, but it doesn't work like that. And I know how busy we all are, and unless something is sort of quite attractive and straightforward, mapping these sort of routes are actually quite complicated. And, you know, from a cycling point of view, is it probably even worse where you end up in dead ends or you can't turn right or left? Some very simple sort of changes could be made to actually make, and it's not necessarily rocket science, but it's just making those, adapting those sort of things. And I think we're starting, we recognise that a route through Onchan and Douglas would be really important, as well as perhaps one round the other way through Braddon as well. So we've come up with ideas on a couple of routes, but this is only part of the piece. There's a lot about education and all of those and skills and so forth to do with this.
Is one of the keys in encouraging active travel, be it walking, cycling, running, whatever, is having a route that people feel safe in, feeling this as security? Because, you know, some people are more confident cyclists than others, etc., and don't want to interact with the traffic. So is it about safety?
I think it absolutely is, but it's also about the perception of safety and not feeling, if you like, intimidated. Now, one example could be, and look at one of the routes we're looking at is from a sheltered housing complex for elderly people to feel confident that they could walk to the shop. So it's about those sort of routes. It's about getting everybody, giving them the choice, because we were talking about this the other day, and it is interesting that I would say 99.5% of spend is all about moving cars and lorries, which is really, really important, and that's absolutely the right thing to do. But we know that it has huge health benefits and lots of other social benefits if people have an opportunity, and it's purely about giving an opportunity for people to be able to socialise and interact and be able to walk or cycle to different places. Mm-hmm. When we're creating these routes, we're trying to be mindful not just of workplaces, but also of where elderly people are, but also where schools are, for example, and that's another key bit for us.
You mentioned workplaces there. Do you look at the sort of flow of traffic, if you will, and the commute for employers, employees as part of this? Because I suppose you're hoping as well through the active travel strategy, you also have an impact on traffic.
Well, it will do, and also on pollution and emissions and so forth. It has so many significant benefits, and actually, for a very small amount, I think the public health director said that, you know, if you were to prescribe this, it would be deemed as a miracle cure. Mm. It sounds so simple, but often life doesn't work like that, and everything is so complicated. And I feel if I go for a run or walk, sometimes you don't feel safe. It may actually be safe, but you don't feel safe. And it's giving people the opportunity of where they go from the workplace to really say, oh, this is a pleasant route that we can walk or run or cycle to get to where we want to get to. And we need to be mindful of working with workplace, and we have somebody coordinating with the workplaces and different companies and also in schools as well, to really sort of just, it's part of being a special place to live and work. And I think this is why I think to have something demonstrable like this would be quite an exciting win for the island, really.
Now, must stress, we're way off any detailed designs. It's sort of a proposal that has been highlighted by, yes, Douglas Council. They've been looking at it for the section that you proposed through Nobles Park. I'd like to ask, how is this being progressed? You're sort of discussing these proposals at the moment, and I know there's a consultant you've got in on the active travel strategy. So I just wondered, what's the timeline for this?
Well, they're a charity and a partner, a very important partner, because they've done this work, Sustrans, across the adjacent aisle. And we have regular monthly strategy meetings working across departments. So it is very much a health and education cabinet office. It's a cross-department work. And I would imagine next year and a half is going to be a lot of that's going to be planning before we actually get into sort of some of the other things, because it's better to plan well than if you like, dive straight in. But you will see some work, pilot work with some of the schools this year as well. Because it's simple things, you know, go back to cycling in the sense of maintaining bikes, you know, what you shouldn't, you know, training, you know, because most people have only been trained up to, you know, and actually don't feel safe or know what to do if they're cycling. And the same even for walking and giving facilities, looking at those sort of how we can encourage people to have facilities in their workplace and so forth. It's a whole sort of complicated, and it works, as I say, across health, education, and all of the departments. But it is just sort of trying to just sort of nudge, if you like, and give people the option where they may feel sort of barriers that have prevented them in the past.
In your mind, when you think about active travel, do you see 10 years from now, when things are probably more established, do you see the overarching system being one where we have our cars, bikes and walkers all living together peacefully, or rather that we do have separate areas for the separate ways of travelling?
It's going to be a little bit of both. I mean, the way I see it is there's different spaces for different purposes. So, for example, if you take the prom, actually being able to have the most important thing is about community, and the person who's walking in there and sitting and enjoying the prom is the most important, in my view. If you're driving on the mountain road, getting to A to B, the lorries have to get to where they need to, or the airport, and that's the most important thing. So it's really about designing things that meet the needs of the different spaces. If you've noticed, a lot of areas in the past have very strong, strict barriers and almost become quite intense in terms of their structure or how a place looks and feels. If we want to make it a special place to live and work, we have to sort of break down those areas. So I think in many cases it is about sharing space, but in other areas actually having a cut through for somebody to walk through rather than having to fight on the main road, you know, it can be a good thing. And it can be very simple changes. For example, you know, no entry that you can still walk through or cycle or whatever. So it's a cultural change to understand that actually when we're on the prom, we're enjoying the prom as a space rather than trying to necessarily automatically go A to B, although that's important as well. So it's a very complicated balance, and it's getting that balance right so that, if you like, you help as many people as possible.
Infrastructure Minister Ray Harmer. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Well, Isle of Man Cycling is a stakeholder in the active travel strategy and is keen to see routes emerge. I hear from their representative, Rob Holden, on this proposed Douglas to Onchan cycleway.
Active travel's been part of programme for government since January 2017. Since then, DOI have engaged with Sustrans to oversee their active travel strategy. And for your listeners, active travel, if they're not aware, is enabling people to choose walking or cycling rather than using a vehicle for short journeys, for things like going to work, going to place of education. So it's basically building activity into your daily lives rather than having to put on some sort of special clothing to do exercise, which everyone's widely aware that they need to do a little bit more of. So that's what active travel is. So part central to that clearly is the movement of people from sort of residential areas into workplaces. So if you look at what the island is, you know, the bulk of the populace is Douglas Onchan. You know, we've got a big residential area in surrounding Douglas. So naturally that's the focus. And what I would say is key, you know, central to everything is having a network so that people understand, you know, some are safer routes, some are routes that have low traffic volumes or they have lower speeds, etc., etc., and the best rate to go.
Is the best route a route that which doesn't have separate modes of transport competing? Well, not competing.
That's it feels like term. It sometimes.
Yeah, separate. You know, would the the best route for a cyclist for a walk would be one where they don't have to interact any traffic.
Absolutely, absolutely. Of course it is. I mean, the gold standard is separation, whether you walk, whether you cycle, whether you drive. And this is something that, a lot of European countries have absolutely nailed it in some respects, the Dutch especially. So their design standards understand that that's going to have to happen at some at some juncture, where you're going to have to mix people on bikes and vehicles, but they adapt their road system to fit that, if they can't segregate it. So that would mean lower speeds, different junction designs. So if you look at walking, for example, what I'd like to see for walking and to enable people to feel safer walking is the upgrade of junctions, where you've got continuous pavements over the junction, rather than this sort of ideal that, it's a sort of 1970s idea, road traffic engineers' idea of, it's been about one mode of transport, and that's vehicle driving and the flow of that traffic. So if you think about urban spaces and the volume of vehicles, you can't really have traffic flow. So why are we building junctions that have turns that enable a vehicle to carry speed, when we know what we know about speed now and the injuries and the impacts it causes? So it's looking at the whole aspect of things and how we can do things a little bit better than we have done for the last 50 years. Because if you prioritise one mode of transport for 50 years, you end up with what we've got, and that's everyone using their vehicle because it's the easiest thing to do.
Well, the minister, when I had a chat with him about this proposal from Douglas Tawonkin, we were talking widely about the active travel strategy, and he was keen to stress it wasn't a cycleway. He was hoping to have bikes and walkers, runners, all on the same route. Now, I just want to ask, from your perspective, would an effort to please everyone leave everyone disappointed? I mean, how do you make it safe for everybody?
Yeah, there's definitely a chance of that. And the way I'd highlight that is, if you look in the first instance, there's a really good opportunity with the prom regeneration and the heritage trail, old railway line, whichever one you want to call it, to if you look at the opportunity we've got there to have sort of separate routes for different modes of transport, that is the one. If you were building the space you've got on the prom from scratch, there's no way you would integrate people walking and people cycling in the same path. So for me, I have spoken to the minister about this, is, we should be looking at segregation there for people walking and cycling. I completely understand, for someone walking on the prom, because I've ridden on the prom, how intimidating that can be for someone coming by on a push bike. Especially when you've got young kids riding about on little bikes and scooters, etc. So, let's have a clear demarcation where we've got the space to do it. And I believe that the prom is a classic case of that. Again, with the old railway line, if you look at, active travel, if it's about walking and cycling, but if you look at cycling, a 3 mile journey, should at pootling pace, we're not talking about Tour de France riders here, in your normal clothes, normal standard bike, not a race bike, and you should be able to poot along no problem at 10 miles an hour on the flat, which is what the Heritage Trail is. So 3 miles is a 15-20 minute journey. Should be easy and convenient. The problem I have with the Heritage Trail is there's been money allocated to it, but it's certainly sort of the 3 miles outside of Douglas, that it should be completely tarmac. Nearly all of it is at that first 3 mile out to Crosby. But be more ambitious about that. That is what I would say. It's a golden opportunity to have two routes from Oncombe, which is into the populace there with the prom. Let's have people walking, let's have people cycling, let's segregate them where we can. The space to do it. Again, with the Heritage Trail, coming in from Crosby and Saddlestone, places like that, Heritage Trail is a great opportunity. The elephant in the room, of course, is Quarterbridge Roundabout, which is going to be a big job. But what I would say about Quarterbridge Roundabout is that junction works for absolutely no mode of transport whatsoever. Let's get on with doing that. Let's have ambition and let's go for it, because what history tells us, the Dutch haven't got the culture they've got out of chance. They built for it. You know, so I'm not saying, I'm not advocating that we will be Amsterdam within 10 years, but we have to start somewhere, you know, and giving equal opportunity to every mode of transport. And again, as I've just been speaking to Stu Peters about this, you know, people make the mistake when I talk about advocating for cycling, more people cycling, it's about everyone jumping on a bike. It's absolutely not. It's about equaling up the transport choices for people to choose. One day you might choose the car, one day you might choose the bike, one day you might walk. But currently we don't, you know, in a lot of cases, and certainly for people with restricted mobility, walking around Douglas is not pleasant, you know, and you don't realise that until you do it, you know, and see it.
Do you think the vision is in place then for equal opportunities for the different modes of transport? Is it in place? Because at the moment, it isn't an equal playing field, and there's a big car lobby, and there probably always will be.
Yeah, the bulk of the people use vehicles. You know, you can't get away from that fact. So obviously, people will have strong feelings about that. But like I say, to enable active travel, you need to start looking at. And we're talking about it specifically in sort of, you know, the towns around the Alaman urban spaces. Is, you know, the options you've got are things like low traffic neighbourhoods. So that's stopping through traffic from neighbourhoods. They call it filtered permeability. So, you know, residents can move about in vehicles, no problem at all, but you're stopping through traffic. Speed limit reductions where you want to mix traffic, you know, junction upgrades to enable more pedestrians and slower vehicle movements, to be quite frank, through junctions in urban spaces. These are all things that stop no one driving whatsoever. Sure, they cost money, but we need to invest, because currently not investing is costing us in the region of £17 million a year, purely from people's lifestyle choices and inactivity. You know, that's not me spouting, you know, a figure out the air. The Director of Public Health has gone on record as with this information. So we need to start building activity into daily lives without us having to put on special safety equipment or special clothing. And just be better at what we're doing. In terms of the vision, there is an active travel strategy out there, and there are policies in place to do this. And as we've just been talking about the road safety strategy, we've got absolutely reams of really well-written, well-intentioned policies. Where it falls down is when there seems to be a lack of ambition in following through with those policies. And that's what sometimes is the frustrating element of what I do.
Mm, of course, and you'll be lobbying on that, and I'm sure ministers have got a host of stuff they've got to get on with them. But cost as well will be important in what people decide they can and can't do with it.
Well, absolutely. And what I would say is that, you know, politicians have recognised, our local politicians have recognised through their policies that, and they've started to join the dots between transport and health. You know, the Director of Public Health has recognised it, that, you know, she's quoted as saying, you know, even the design of our housing estates needs to be different, and it contributes to mental well-being, et cetera, et cetera. We all know this information, but we've kind of designed our way out of it, and we've got to design our way back into it, and it is a choice. The information's there. It's the political will that will hold it back, or the boldness to carry through with some potentially counterintuitive decisions. You know, so that could be parking restrictions, for example. So if you look at the space that's allocated to vehicles that are parked around, you know, I live in Douglas, you know, and you know, it's something that I've I don't know if it's because I'm old now, but, you know, the actual amount of space that's allocated, look at the prom, to parking. Of course we need parking. Everyone understands that. But, you know, what space have we got for parking? We've got multiple multi-storey car parks that are at maximum 75% capacity. Do, you know, by allocating reams of free parking, and I know this is controversial for some people, but we induce what we've got. You know, you look at Onken Head and the parking up there, the issues for residents there from all the employment up there, and people say, what I would say is we need to be more progressive. Company businesses, private businesses need to be more progressive. You know, there's a cost to parking, you know, and I think if a company offers free parking, it runs at around about £1,500, £1,600 a year. How about we offer a bike parking space and we give a rebate to the employee to either leave their car at home and whether they choose to walk, cycle, use the bus, and give them a rebate that way, then there's a cost saving there. You know, there's lots of, you know, in, you know, ways to start eating into, you know, what has, you know, quite a lot of public space has been taken over by just vehicles that don't move for 95% of the time.
Do you think if we adopted or moved towards giving equal opportunities, different modes of transport and active travel routes started to appear, do you think our towns would look nicer? Do you...
That's a very good point, actually. Yeah, it is a really good point. And interestingly enough, the well, I mean, there's lots of information out there, but, you know, it, organisations, you know, British Medical Journal, World Health Organization, you name it, they're all advocating that you know, we need to build for this, and businesses understand this. Once there's lots of examples. Department for Transport in the UK, you know, I've put detailed documents out about making spaces for people, basically in a business area. So if you make a place attractive for people, they stay. The anomaly you've got on the prom is you'll hear the cries, well, we've lost parking spaces in the prom regen, business will never survive. To be frank, Grand Street, I keep hearing, is struggling, and we've got lots and lots of free parking and we've got lots of parking available. The free parking myth needs to be busted.
Isle of Man Cycling's Rob Holden. Well, that's all from tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week, and you can listen again to this episode via Manx Radio's On Demand and online as a podcast. But for now, have a good evening.